One Man's Family, winner of 46 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 26th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. In 60 seconds, we'll hear Chapter 59, Book 129 of the Barber Family Saga. But first, hear this.
Let's take a moment to think of the world we live in, of just how small it really is. Transportation today makes it possible to visit many countries and a chance to win many new friends. So, imagine you're about to take a furlough in the small, friendly country of Greece. The Greece you are about to see is a fantastic collection of islands and mountains straddling the blue waters of the Aegean and Ionian seas. Its borders, covering only 350 miles from east to west and from north to south, offer a climate and a geography in unbelievable variations, and its 8 million or so people are justly proud of their historical background, for their ancient civilization has rightly been called the first great civilization of the Western world. The Greeks have many amazing and beautiful ruins, which have stood in all their glory for 2,500 years as proof of their civilized past. Actually, much that Europeans and Americans value in our modern civilization came down to us from Greece. For example, the idea of democracy was first developed and put into practice by the Greeks 500 years before Christ. Even the word democracy itself comes from two Greek words, meaning the people and authority. Greek philosophy, science, literature, and architecture, and art have had a profound influence on Western developments in these fields. So you see, the modern Greek is rightfully proud of this great inheritance and sees himself as a descendant of Demosthenes, Socrates, Plato, and others. Yes, your enjoyment of day-to-day living and weekend excursions in Greece will be much greater if you understand a little of the background of the things that you see and the people that you meet. The Greeks are an intelligent people and want to be your friends. But remember, the only way to have a friend is to be one.
Today, the visit to Berkeley. On a narrow, secluded street in Berkeley, within sound of the campanile on the campus of the university, an elderly gentleman from Seacliff is paying a call on a grandson who was raised in Britain. Andrew Barber has found it difficult to appreciate or understand his grandfather, and so rarely visits the family home. He listens quietly as Father Barber says,
"Yes, and I know how busy you are, Andrew. Claudia, Paul, Jack, and Margaret, yes, when they were in college, we didn't see much of them. As a matter of fact, of Pinky, either."
"Quite. I hear Pinky's in Tahiti with Cousin Consider. Pardon me, Grandfather, did you say Margaret drove you over here?"
They'll pick me up after a while. You see, there are one or two matters I want to discuss with you in private."
"I see. Forgive me, I interrupted. What were you saying about Pinky?"
"Eh?
You started to say something about..."
Oh, yes. Here it is. It was merely a comment. Pinky was given $1 million less taxes by Consider Martin, as you know." "Oh, but on second thought, I don't see why I should go into that."
"No, please do. I like Pinky very much. I've not seen half enough of him. I think he's amusing."
"Yes. I wasn't going to be critical of Pinky. It was merely an observation. It has finally dawned on him that his conscience will not be easy if he allows Consider Martin to roam about the world alone."
"Because he accepted the money, you mean?"
"Well, I wouldn't put it in such materialistic terms, Andrew."
"I would, sir. Pinky's married to the old gentleman."
"Pardon?"
"Married by money, as it were."
No. Pinky felt, at last, that you cannot accept a token of affection and not respond in kind. Oh, but I didn't come here to discuss Pinky."
"No, sir."
"I'm sorry I brought it up. It makes what I want to say rather awkward."
"Oh?"
"You realize that when I proposed to you that I would like to help with your college tuition, it was not certainly to put you under any obligation whatever. As your grandfather, I feel it's my duty to do what I can for my grandchildren."
"Well, I don't know why you should take that line with me, sir. I'm not in need of any help. My father sends me an allowance. I keep meticulous track of it and will eventually pay it back. I like to be independent."
"Yes. Well, oh, confound it, Andrew. We got off to a bad start when you first arrived here. Let's not make it any worse. I'd like to correct an impression, if I may."
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean."
"You thought my offer to help you was in the nature of a bribe. Now, don't interrupt. Because you are my only grandson who will carry on the family name."
"Well, I wanted to talk to you about that."
"Before you do, let me finish what I was saying, please."
"Quite. Sorry."
Now, the last time we were together, Christmas week, I told you when somebody talked about modern young married people in college, I said if by any remote chance you should decide to marry, I would stand ready with a scholarship for your wife.
Quite. Now, may I...
There were no conditions, Andrew. None. And the offer is still good. I would not expect you to feel under obligation to me because I can well afford it. And the situation is not the same as Pinky's and Consider Martin.
I think it's precisely the same, if you don't mind my saying.
But they are playboys. You are trying to get an education. It's not the same at all.
Now may I speak?
Certainly.
I tried to say this before. You were talking at the time. I tried to say this at Christmas, but you were talking then. I am very much interested in a girl named Mrs. Bonnie McGowan. She's a widow, 20 years old, and has a little son. Bonnie is a student here at Cal and able to look after herself. I have not proposed to her grandfather, but I hope to, and if she accepts me, I shall marry her. You might as well know it now. She can never have another child. I told Uncle Paul to tell you. Perhaps he forgot.
No, he told me. I have just said there were no conditions. I would like to help you in any way I can. I sometimes fail to understand your father when he was a boy. I would like to make amends now, if I can, to his son.
Someone's on the stairs, sir. I'll have to let them in.
Yes, go ahead. There's nothing more to say. It's Hazel, Margaret, so let them in.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
Get the picture. You can now participate in classroom study through telecourses being distributed by USAFI. Films have already been prepared on several different subjects, and others are being added. Each course includes from 12 to 20 half-hour films, which can be shown on any standard 16-millimeter projector. The telecourses weren't designed to replace regular USAFI high school and college correspondence courses, but to be taken in addition to such courses. For example, if you are studying USAFI course 164, beginning Algebra 1, through correspondence, you can get additional instruction by attending 16 one-half-hour filmed lectures on the same subject. These lectures are conducted exactly as though the students were actually in the classroom. Why don't you take advantage of this opportunity to further your education while serving in the armed forces? See your education officer for details, then enroll with USAFI and let a telecourse be your guide.
During the long drive through evening traffic across the Bay Bridge and through the city to Seacliff, Father Barber sits in the back seat of Margaret's car with his chin on his chest and his collar turned up, making no effort to join in the conversation. Now, as they arrive at the family home...
You're coming in?
No, but I want to talk to you for a minute.
For some reason, Margaret, Andrew and I always start off on the wrong foot.
He seems so aloof. You have a feeling that he looks at you in that steady way and thinks how very American they are.
Yes, and difficult to talk to. We always seem to be at odds. I don't understand it. Well, this afternoon, I inadvertently made some remarks about Pinky, to which Andrew attached the wrong significance. I never could get things straightened out. I don't know. Have you noticed how much he looks like Clifford?
Oh, we saw that the first time we saw them together, when Sidney and I were in Scotland. Except that Uncle Cliff is gay and Andy's more serious.
I try it again, that's all I can say. He looked at me very coldly as I left.
Oh, I didn't think so.
Yes, very. I could feel it. It's a rare experience for me to have a grandson who condescends to me.
Then he's wrong.
Perhaps we'll work it out some way. And someday. Well, you want to get back to your mother, so I'll...
Grandfather, I felt rather badly last night when I was talking to Aunt Claudia and we deliberately moved away from
you. Think nothing of it. That sort of thing has gone on as long as I can remember.
We were both sorry afterward. It seemed so pointed. The truth is, I was telling her something about Bruce Conrad I thought she should know.
I happen to be abreast of these reports.
No. Well, now Sidney has discovered that Bruce has spent nearly every afternoon with another girl. She's a secretary. Doesn't know that Penny exists. And Penny doesn't know the secretary exists. I didn't want to be the one to tell her, and neither did Sidney. So, Aunt Claudia and Uncle Mickey will have to drive down this weekend and decide after they get there what they're going to do.
Let me!
Is someone calling?
Let me!
Oh, it's Grandmother on the front porch.
Henry, it's Andrew, telephoning from Berkeley. Hurry.
Oh, yes. Good night, Margaret. See you later. Yes, yes. Come here, Sandy. Tell the boy I'm on the way.
More of the Barbers in just a moment. I'm sure you won't mind my breaking in to talk with you for a few seconds, so long as what I have to talk about is interesting. And there's one subject everyone finds interesting. Money. So let's see what we can find to say about such an interesting subject. The other day, I heard someone say that since the United States Treasury dug a big hole down in the hills of Kentucky and buried our gold in it, the next thing they'll do is move the mint down there so it'll be next to the jewelers. But to get serious, the Fort Knox Depository is actually as much a part of the Treasury Department's responsibility as the coining of metal money and the engraving and printing of paper currency. The Treasurer of the United States, not to be confused with the Secretary of the Treasury, has the job of taking charge of all United States currency and the handling of it. Sounds like a job for a woman, doesn't it? Well, if you have a dollar bill in your pocket, take it out and look at it.
Oh, Melvin.
Odds are that the name on the bottom of the bill is that of a woman, the Treasurer of the United States.
Father Barber hurries into the library and picks up the phone.
Yes, here I am. Hello.
Grandfather? I was sorry we didn't get a chance to talk a bit more.
Yes, Andrew?
That was very important, excuse me. And while Bonnie and I won't need help and probably wouldn't accept it anymore, still I feel I should tell you that I do appreciate your generosity, and I know how much that other aspect means to you, which made it doubly generous.
Well, you are kind to call me, Andrew.
I hope to see you soon. I want you to leave.
Thank you.
Goodbye, sir. Thanks again.
Everything all right, Henry?
Yes,
sir.
Yes. Oh, yes. Everything's all right. That's a splendid boy, Andrew. He would have had splendid son.
One Man Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carl Dean Morse, and features J. Anthony Smythe, Bernice Berwin, Paige Gilman, Russell Forson, and Mary Adams. One Man's Family has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 60, Book 129, The Interrupted Insurance Report. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 46 national awards, now in its 26th year, is a Carl Dean Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.